would like to offer a generous welcome back to our listeners as we step into our second of our four-part series on conversations and living and dying well. My name is Lissa DeFreitas, and I will be your host today as we explore the journey of loss and healing. We would like to welcome again our panel of leading edge experts in palliative care, Dr. Nicole Pelly and Jenna Moss, LCSW. Also, please join with me in welcoming our community members, Steve Garvin and Jennifer Wyman, as we step into conversation about their personal experience of sudden loss, as well a journey of caring for a beloved while on hospice. We're going to look at what this journey of loss and healing might look like and how their lives were changed by their experience. Grief and mourning have often been referred to as a journey of healing, very unique to every individual, with many winding paths. Some losses tragic and unexpected, while some planned, anticipated, and sometimes welcomed with great peace. As we begin our journey today, I would like to direct this first question to you, Jenna. If you were to encapsulate the journey of loss and healing, what would you say are some of the key factors that might assist others that are moving through this journey?
Well, thank you. First of all, I like that you said it was a unique journey, because I think that that's most important. Like, we've learned a lot since Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's time, and she very well, you know, put out the stages of grief and loss. But people tended to look at those as specific, linear stages, and it's not like that at all. There's so much that goes into it, and it's much more fluid than that. And so if that's all you know about grief and mourning, you might feel like you're not doing it right. So first, right off the bat, is it's a unique journey, and it's like Braille. You feel your way through it. And I counsel people to just pay really close attention to their thoughts and their emotions and body sensations and inspirations. Get the support that they need so that they can feel safe in doing that. But to really, it's like going through a tunnel for a time. And
So that's very dark, actually.
It can be dark. Yeah. Yes, it can be dark, but keep going.
Yeah.
Don't stop. Keep going.
Yeah.
So, and there are three main aspects of mourning, and that is to acknowledge that the death has occurred. And even in hospice, when people are in hospice, they know that they're dying, it's still a surprise at the end that it actually has happened. And birth is like this too, like, wow, that just happened. So acknowledging the death is really an important part of it. And then making meaning out of it, out of the person's life, as well as out of how they died. I think that death story is very important. And then it's reinvesting in life again. And you go back and forth between all of those. But, you know, but that is basically like the umbrella or the overview of that journey.
Sort of like the basic steps. Mm-hmm. And yet through it, there can be a lot of peaks and valleys. And a lot of times when people go through a loss, they think, oh, well, I'm doing pretty good. And then, boom, suddenly they encounter an experience that kind of takes them lower than they ever thought they'd go. And what would you describe that as? And how common is that for people?
I think that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And I would describe it as waves in the ocean.
Yeah.
If you've ever been to the ocean, and some waves are huge and they knock you down and you have to shake it out and get back up again. And so it's very much like you know, big waves come and knock you down. And then there's relative calm, right? And you look at the ocean and it's the same day, but it's calm. And then all of a sudden, here comes some more. And you don't know when you're going to get hit. Mm-hmm. You know, but just to know that nothing is static. Right. Just like that ocean, it's moving.
Right.
And so to move through it and be as buoyant as you can be.
Mm-hmm. That's beautifully shared. One of the things that I notice, and just checking in with all of you, is that many people thinking about the Kubler-Ross model think, oh, well, I got to get to acceptance. I got to get to this place where, you know, I erase this person from my life. When in truth, it's about keeping that relationship going. It's about the continuing bonds. It's sharing the love story. It's about allowing that to be a sacred place within you. Have you noticed that in your work with others, that was a comfort for them to realize it was not something they had to put in a drawer? It's something they carry with them in their hearts ongoing through their life.
That's what grieving people have shown us, yeah, as practitioners, is that relationship. You do not have to let go, right, of the relationship. The relationship continues. You still have that, and it even seems back and forth. And you still talk to that person, but it changes,
yeah,
right? They're not in the physical anymore, but that relationship and what you've shared is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of walking through that tunnel, like initially the death is what's front and center. But as you go through the process of healing and mourning, their life becomes, again, you can remember their life and who they were and different aspects, not just that they died.
Mm-hmm. I know that you work with a full spectrum of people at very different levels of, say, a diagnosis. And one of the things that I know it comes up with hospice too is that as people might receive a diagnosis, they kind of go through a period of mourning, don't they? Or how would you describe that process or that journey as they're embracing that part of their life?
As a palliative care physician, I see patients really at all stages of their journey. I see them initially after they've been diagnosed, and then sometimes closer to the end of their journey. I think that loss of who they were is significant. It's different for each person, as Jenna alluded to, but it's very, very significant. The reality is that each of us changes every day, and each of us loses a little bit of the person that we were the day before. We just don't always think of it in those terms. One of the things I most commonly see as I'm seeing patients is that my patients and their families especially are in stages of anticipatory grief.
Mm-hmm.
They know what's coming. They just don't know what it's going to look like. And they don't know what their lives are going to feel like without that person there.
Mm-hmm.
I remind them that especially children with parents, they've never known their life perhaps without their parent there. So they can't imagine what that's going to feel like. There's a lot of fear involved when we look at anticipatory grief. And so giving a name to that stage, giving a name to those fears, helps people understand that what they're feeling is natural and normal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a process that we can help them work through.
Mm-hmm.
I often tell people when I've used this with many different people, but I'll say, buy a candle, a beautiful candle that holds a tea light. And when you're together now, while you're both still alive, light that candle together when you're together and celebrate being together while you're alive.
Mm-hmm.
Then when one of you dies, the other of you still has that candle that has that energy that you lit together as two people. So after the person has died, the remaining survivor can relight that candle holder, celebrating the energy that the two of you had together and really carrying that into the future at all times, so that that candle has energy from both of you in it and is a powerful reminder.
Mm, that's so beautiful, because what I'm hearing you talk about are rituals that we can create, which can be so important in a healing journey, but to actually take that ahead of the head of the loss and to really anchor that is like, wow, that feels so healing to be able to have that experience, to have that forethought.
It's acknowledging the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
The word that we don't often say, we are going to die. Right. Death is that elephant that we don't always talk about. No matter how much alive we feel today, death is going to come to all of us. The candle or whatever ritual you decide, or even just talking in conversation about dying, acknowledges that elephant in the room that we're all afraid of on different levels.
Mm-hmm. I would like to address this question to you, Jenna. What do you think about our cultural kinds of responses to loss and grieving? I just noticed that sometimes in a time of great loss, people sometimes don't seem to know how to meet up with us, or there could be a sense of really raw discomfort. I just wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Because we're not so great in our culture that death has been taking it out of our homes, and we're not so good at talking about the elephant there, to me, it communicates that that person doesn't know what to say, and they're uncomfortable. But a grieving person is very vulnerable and raw. And so, and our other panel members can speak to this more, but that I think that it more expresses that they're isolated. And so where our community could support them, and that is the way that they help to heal, to have that support. But I think that it really does mean that somebody's uncomfortable.
Right. And that stirred something for you, Dr. Pally.
Yeah, I have a lot of what people would consider really uncomfortable conversations with my patients in my office. And one of the tools that I learned in palliative care is that my job is simply to witness the suffering. Mm-hmm. I cannot change the suffering. I can't change the diagnosis. I can't change the fact that the person I'm sitting with is going to die in the near future. Mm-hmm. But I can witness what they're feeling at the moment in terms of their sadness, mm-hmm. their joy, their fear. I can witness what they're going to, sometimes without words, but just being present with them as a human being. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that it doesn't take a medical degree to do that.
Right.
I think when we're encountering people with loss, sometimes when there are no words, there are no words.
Yeah.
We talk a lot in this society. I think we can learn to simply witness the suffering, be present with people, and not worry whether the words we say are correct or not.
Ah, and you bring up something that's so important. Two things here is our healing presence, that gift that we can give to one another simply by being, simply by showing up and acknowledging the loss and acknowledging the pain without having to say a word. And, you know, even though they say that, you know, 90% of our language is nonverbal, you know, that's just an example of how powerful our presence can be, you know, in that moment. And I just think that even though we do talk, you know, we think we have to be the experts. In truth, we do not have to be an expert. All of us. It's a universal experience that we each have when it comes to loss. And it could be in varying degrees, but it's our ability to stand in that, bearing witness to, which is a beautiful gift.
That, I'm so glad you brought that up. I tend to be a teary, empathic person. And so often, if I do run across somebody in the grocery store and I know their story, I just put my hand on their shoulder and tear up like I am now, just even imagining it. And expressing that support. I know, I feel your pain, and I'm here.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, Jenna.
Just a pat on the shoulder, right?
Beautiful.
It's simple, and I think that we actually do know how to do this, mm-hmm. because from the very beginning of humanity, we have been living and dying and supporting each other, mm-hmm. and so we just kind of have to resurrect it. So I have, in my counseling practice, I have heard things that people have experienced, like, God, you're still crying? It's been over a month. Shouldn't you be, you know, stop crying so much? Or just that time-limited part. Or it's been a year, you know, or it's been 3 months. Do you want to join my singles group? just you know, caring, coming from a caring place, but insensitive, I guess. And so it's the timeline, I think, or time will heal, you know, trying to make it all better. We can't make it all better. We can be witness to it. And I think that's a really important concept that Dr. Pelley brought up. We cannot make it all better. Something happened that someone didn't want to happen. But, yeah.
That's beautiful.
I think what's important, too, here is that it is transformative in every way, shape, and form from your life prior to the loss and to your life as the survivor after the loss. Also, it may sound typical or something, but I know strongly what happened was I reexamined not my life so much before as what I could do or wanted to do or would be comfortable doing going forward after this loss. And that was a really great constructive conversation with myself to have. Sometimes it ended up also being held with a grief counselor or an adult grief group at times. But that was really a major thing, especially because in my case, it was my wife, and it was sudden in the sense of 14 months from nothing to death, and we didn't have children or family in the area. And I realized at a point in that process that it was the most important job I'll ever have or could ever have to see her through that journey as caregiver and husband and partner. And then when, after she had passed away, I didn't feel comfortable as an individual with the idea of group at first. I was seeing a counselor who became sort of a grief counselor. But after a year, I decided I would try group. And that was one of the major things, the adult grief group here, sponsored by hospice, helping on the path to healing. Also, the shared stories in there, no matter what the loss was, or whether it was husband or wife or father or mother or child, they often, those stories helped with you feeling comfortable going on and, I guess you'd say, enacting some path towards a healing journey, whether it was weeks or months or years. And there were a couple of incidences where people say, oh, it's been da-da-da, get over it. No, that doesn't work, you know. And I just think that that's an important thing to note as part of rejoining the circle of life, because the circle of life includes life and death and rebirth, no matter what stage in our lives it occurs.
You mentioned earlier taking that person that you've lost forward into life with you again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really under-talked about point. Certainly in medicine, when I have patients that I know are going to be dying, we can plan for that a little bit. I sometimes ask my patients, have you ever had an experience with somebody after they've died where you feel like you felt their presence around them? They look at me kind of funny because it's not a typical question for a medical doctor to ask. But what I've learned is that when you ask that question, the majority of people have had some kind of experience. Maybe they don't want to talk about it. Maybe they feel embarrassed. Maybe they feel like they're a little bit crazy. But when you give them permission to share that experience, it can be incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. Research into this area has actually shown that 60 to 70% of people have had some kind of experience that they feel like was an experience with somebody after that they've died.
Wow.
Those experiences can be incredibly, incredibly powerful. We just don't talk about them. And so I like to encourage my patients, people that I know who have experienced loss, to use that question to find out whether they have had experiences like that, and to use that as really creating a dialogue. We don't always mention names of the people that we have lost. After they have died, we tend to not say their names anymore. And I like to encourage people to continue to use their names. We all know as parents, when we have a child who's died and people stop saying their names, how painful that can be. It's okay when you see somebody who's lost someone to use the name of the person that they have lost. We don't have to gloss over that. It's it's good to say names of the people who've died.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think that's part of the myth that you were talking about when we're looking at supporting others that have experienced a loss, that we think that if we say something, it's going to cause them pain. And a lot of what I hear from people in this journey of healing is that I am painful because I did not hear their name, that it feels like that has gone away. And they haven't gone away in my heart. And so to hear that, to have that experience, it seems that would be a very powerful an acknowledgement of the beauty of the life that's lived and that still lives within us.
Well, and it's the beauty and the tragedy and the emotion and, again, the transformation. Yeah. Because that person and your experience in life with them is going to carry into the rest of your life, no matter what the circumstances of their death was. And I think that embracing that and acknowledging that is a critical part for you or your family and friends to go on and have healthy healing.
Yes, yes. And I'm just wondering, Jennifer, if you feel open to kind of speak to your experience of your loss and things that might have happened in your time of healing that were really supportive to you, and maybe even mentioning some things that were not supportive to you. Just open to sharing whatever you're called to share.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jennifer, and I am the mother of Madison Wyman, whom we lost in November of 2015 from suicide. Though our loss was a bit different than, you know, most people may experience, it's still real, and it's still, you know, common amongst, you know, some people. And the pain is the same regardless of, you know, the cause of death. Losing a child is definitely something that a mother or father can never, you know, imagine until you're experiencing it. We had younger children as well. So we had four children, and our focus was on our remaining three. We needed to hold tight as a family and find out how to survive together. My husband and I, you know, just really are thankful, you know, that our family bond, you know, was deep enough that we did, you know, get through that tough time. The pain doesn't go away. It's always there. And it's a new day and a new experience of that pain as we move on. However, I love what everybody's been saying so far. You know, saying her name is definitely important to our family, because that's, I think, as a parent, one of our fears is that she'll be forgotten. Our family hasn't forgotten. And I think that that's what we struggle with, is that when they're gone, they won't be remembered. So it is very, I mean, it will be painful to hear their name, but it's a good pain. It's a healing pain. It reminds us that, you know, she did matter, and that she, you know, made a difference, and that she's, you know, left something behind to be remembered. So I love that piece. We definitely, you know, have been through our, you know, various events in the healing process and trying to find what works and what doesn't. Our family has used a lot of memorial days to try to move forward in positive ways, such as birthdays. We still celebrate, you know, our daughter's birthday every year. We always plan ahead. We try to think of what we would do if Maddie were still with us. We choose her favorite restaurant. We might go out for her favorite ice cream. And we, you know, buy balloons and we celebrate as if she was with us, because we believe she is in our hearts at all times. And same thing with the day of her death. We honor that in a positive way. We try to, you know, spend the day as a family, because there are those waves. You know, we refer to them as triggers as a family. But I love your, you know, analogy of it being the ocean and the waves, and that they get big and then they calm down. Because that is definitely true. The emotions come and go in waves, and sometimes they can, you know, knock you down, but you get right back up and you keep going. As well as, you know, events in throughout the year that maybe we think, you know, Maddie would want to do that. Bloom's Day was one of them that our family started because our daughter was an athlete and she had always wanted to participate in Bloom's Day and never had the chance due to her soccer schedule. And so it actually fell on her birthday, the first birthday after she passed. And we signed up and we do it every year as a family. And that's, you know, the whole day of us feeling like Maddie's with us. She's pushing us through that. And my son was 5 when he did it the first year. And he looks forward to it every year. We get, you know, our blue shirts on and we, you know, do something that's memorable, you know, helps us remember her or, you know, just feel, makes us feel like this is, you know, how she would do it. And we, you know, participate. Those are just a few of the things that, you know, are, you know, annual events for us. But there could be, you know, casual dinner conversations as a family or even with guests and family friends where we might just, you know, bust into a memory and we laugh about, you know, remember when Maddie did this? And it definitely is helpful to hear those memories. It reminds us, you know, of her beauty when she was with us and just all the joys that we, you know, had while she was here on earth. Mm-hmm. And so I love that, you know, we can talk about her openly. And it is hard because when you walk into the grocery store, I remember the first couple of months after we lost her, it was hard because, yes, we were raw. And I felt like I had a sign on my forehead, you know, that everybody knew me, that everybody had heard of me and that now I was publicly, you know, out there and I didn't know how I would respond to people. But just the touch of somebody putting their hand on my back, somebody locking eyes with me, anything, you know, just letting me know that they understood and that they felt the pain or that they were experiencing it did help. You know, it just, you don't need words. Words are not necessarily, you know, the only way of communication in that state. So you guys, you know, spoke about that early on and I definitely resonated with that. I think that, you know, it's just so true that everybody has to find what works for them. The healing process is different and it never ends. You're going to find new things as you go on. For us, we're looking at as our other children leave the house. What does that then look like? That's going to be another chapter of our grief process. And I'm sure we'll come up with new things when that time comes. So,
Jennifer, that so moved my heart and being because so often I see a lot of times a loss can be such a strain to a family system. But it's like you just took it and just marched with it. I mean, the bond that you, it's like you created even a stronger bond through the loss, it sounds like, by coming together, by sharing it together as a family, by having the conversations, by celebrating her in all the ways that you did. I'm just so moved. And I thank you so much for sharing the ways that you and your family have journeyed through this healing with Maddie. It's just so inspiring to my heart.
Thank you. I just wanted to add also, you know, that sometimes it's hard because I hear you, you know, praising me for that. And sometimes we have that thought of, you know, are we too happy? Are we moving forward, you know, in too much joy? So it is not easy. The process definitely is very, very painful. So what is maybe on the outside is maybe not what I'm experiencing on the inside. And sometimes, you know, when we've lost somebody, we worry about, you know, are we making the wrong impressions on the outside? But I guess in the, you know, in hearing from community, I feel like, you know, I'm doing the right thing, but I just, you know, that is something that I think people will cross into. And I wanted to mention that, you know, it is almost like guilt sometimes of, mm-hmm. Should we be doing this? Should we be having fun right now? Should we be celebrating and having this much joy? But I think that we have to go back to the person that we lost and what I believe they would want to be having in that moment. Mm-hmm. So it is definitely hard and but it's doable. And yes, you have to, you know, keep getting back up. There's days where you just want to, you know, stay in your room all day and cry. But for us, luckily we had our younger children that needed us and that really helped push us forward. So our situation was, you know, unique in that we had other children to keep us going.
Mm-hmm. I love that, that the difference between what is on the outside and what is on the inside, because sometimes we can be doing all the things, but that doesn't mean the pain is gone away. It just means that you're sharing that journey together as a family, which I just find very rare. And what a beautiful example and modeling, because one of the things that we've seen, and I know Jenna's going to talk about our kids' grief camp at the conclusion of our sharing, but a lot of times what we've seen is that families are all over the place sometimes, and they're not always working together to acknowledge that loss as a family. So to have a modeling of that for your children, to me, sounds like you're giving them a gift to have the understanding that healing happens, you know, that loss happens and tragedy can happen. But together, as we were talking about in our last segment, the importance of saying yes to people who are willing to walk with us on the journey. And as a community, the way the community can come together that assists us in walking in the journey. And what a beautiful gift that is. I know, Steve, you had something.
Well, but also for what you're saying, that you're all still here and you're living and you want to and have to keep living and living, trying to live healthily. And I think that's an incredible real life experience you shared, just for a different real life experience, because we don't have family and kids. Some of the things that I ended up doing to honor her are as markers, which was the word I thought of, and some continue to this day. For the first year or two on our anniversary or on Valentine's or on Christmas, I would write her a card and mail it. And it would come. I wouldn't open it, but I would write it. And like I said, for the first year or two, that seemed to really be a helping tool for me. I decided to put her name on the markers at the Healing Garden, along with many other members of the community. And that's something I see now, because I still go to the Healing Garden once a week when I'm around, year in, year out. And that's an incredible marker and honoring for me when I do see her name there, you know, every time I go. And then also we have that ceremony of remembrance, I call it, in early December. And that's been a way for many of us in the community to honor, remember, and name, as we were talking about, our loved ones that have passed on. And then also for me, also participating and supporting the Night to Remember for Communities Cancer Service once a year in November. These have been, again, some of the concrete ongoing markers as both honoring my wife, Scylla, and what we had, but also in helping me go along on my healing journey.
Mm-hmm. Grief can be so large, and sometimes we are afraid that there's no bottom to the grief. We don't know if we're ever going to get to the bottom of it. And when those waves come, I find if we allow those waves to clean as large of a place inside of us out as we need that wave to clean out, that then creates a space for seeds to land, for something to grow that's new and different. And so using the grief that is going to come in large and heavy ways, allowing it to polish ourselves in ways that perhaps we didn't want to be polished. Mm-hmm. But if we can turn it into a tool, Steve, I think you referred to it before, as a chance for renewment, as a chance to be different. You're never going to be the same again as you were with Scylla. But if you let your grief clean out those deep spaces, it actually makes space for something new. And yet you can continue to honor the people we've lost within those large spaces. Mm-hmm.
I like the polished rock metaphor because, you know, it feels very difficult when we're being pummeled with the waves and the sand and the rocks, and it's not a feel-good thing. But when we look, you know, we look back and we see the transformation, and we're amazed at who we are now. And so many times through the people I have walked with and journeyed with in this healing journey, they say, well, really, you know, I'm just not sure who I am. I'm not sure what my new normal is. I don't even know how to do this life without this person in my life. I'm new, but I don't know who that person is because I'm just learning who that is. And also, that seems
especially like also depending on when these things happen, what age, what stage of life or stage of family development you're in, it's really a call to action and transformation.
Yeah.
I just love, Steve and Jennifer, how you have embraced what's happened to you and brought these Maddie and Scylla forward with you into your life, but that you have a full range of living that you're doing and incorporating your loss and the person that has died in a very real and alive way. I just think that's just perfect. You know, it really is. And thank you also, Jennifer, for saying that this might look good on the outside and we're doing all these wonderful things, but it's a hard won battle, right?
Yeah.
And to acknowledge that it is not easy. And where the community is witnessing this, and when it does happen to others, you're a light in that tunnel. That you can get through it and you can thrive in time.
Yeah. That's beautifully shared, the light in the tunnel. And that's what we're looking for a lot of times because we're not sure the light's going to come, but then comes the hand on our back or a song that we hear that reminds us of the love that never dies within us. And that can be so such a gift and such a comfort. And one of the things that I guess is kind of stirring for me right now, since especially Jennifer, when you were sharing how much you journey together as a family, I'm wondering, Jenna, if you could maybe share a few things, some tidbits that might be a little different for children that are experiencing loss and how that might look a little bit different than, say, for adults.
So for children, they are so much more in the now. And so we have to really honor their way, really let them lead the way. I mean, we can be open to talking about and experiencing the loss and like Dr. Pelley and you all have said, is saying the name and allowing that to be natural. But we have to kind of go at their pace in terms of how much they want to share and at what times, whether they want to go to the funeral or not. And again, I just trust the process. And you can get a sense of sometimes it's a clamping down and that needs to be worked through. But sometimes it's exactly what the kid would need is to not go there with everyone kissing them and, you know, and all that. So to follow their lead and to allow the full range of experience. And I'm just looking in my mind's eye of all those courageous children that come to kids camp and they are amazing and they are wise. And we actually do a radio show at camp. It's called KGRF Radio, Kids Grief, and they are the expert panel. And we pass around an unplugged microphone, but they are sure that they get it right in front of the person who's speaking. And we sift out their knowledge, and they are wise. And so trusting the process and looking at their developmental phase and again, just going with what's showing up and giving them the support to work their way through it.
I spent many years working in a large pediatric hospital, and I was always amazed and inspired by how the children led the way when it came to grief and loss, and that actually we as adults could probably learn from them. The way they intensely grieve without covering anything up, and then they intensely, immediately go back to, where's my blue Lego? They let their emotions out when they feel them. And those emotions are both sadness, and then the next emotion may be immediate joy. And sometimes as adults watching them, we think, whoa, is this okay? Is this right? But it is, because they haven't learned the filters that we have as adults. Yeah. And so I think sometimes we should look to them as role models, actually, for how it's okay to be grieving one moment and laughing the next.
Yeah.
And continuing throughout that process to play.
Yes, that's
a good point.
Very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, as we're at this juncture right now, that maybe it would be helpful to talk about some of the resources that we have in our very own community. I know each of you had shared some things that really assisted you, but maybe we could take a moment, whoever'd like to share, to talk about the resources that could really help when we're in a journey of healing, when we've experienced a loss. What are those things, those resources that have really stood out for you?
Okay. There have been a handful or double handful of very meaningful and important resources of different types, and I'd just like to mention a few of those. First of all, hospice itself as a concept and here in our community is underutilized and an incredibly valuable tool. It's often not interacted with until later than maybe it should or could be. And I'm saying this just as a citizen community person here who's such a believer in hospice, but hospice is an amazing set of resources, people and other things, and I think the community could benefit from even more utilization of that. Grief counseling, whether it's individual or the adult grief group or kids camp or other programs. For me personally, it's been the grief group here, preceded by an individual counselor through Kootenai Health since my wife was treated mainly down in Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene. But also, I was blessed, and I feel like that's been able to be passed along to the community because a little while after my wife passed away, a publisher I had worked for in Colorado a number of years ago, the owner of the company, sent me a book called Living with Loss, One Day at a Time by Rachel Codanez. And I didn't even look at it for a while, to be honest here. But once I did and I read through it, I was stunned because it's a day-by-day compendium of information to help people who are grieving from any number of different reasons, timings, ages, anything like that. And it's just been an amazing practical resource. You can open it up at any point or read it chronologically. And this book in particular has now been shared with over 200 individuals or families in our community through the adult grief group. And so that's been an invaluable tool that seemed to speak to almost everybody that came in some ways that comes to the adult grief group. I think the other thing is not to, we would never forget, but to remember that one of our best resources is our family, our other loved ones, our friends, our work colleagues, our community in all the best senses of that word. One of the reasons I moved here for the third time in my life to a small town is because of that incredible sense of community. Sure, there's some trade-offs, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I think in Sandpoint and Bonner County here, we have an amazing support system and resources for hospice and grieving and healing.
Oh, that's beautiful. Jennifer, I know that you have been the developer of an amazing support here in the community for survivors, suicide survivors. I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about that as a resource for you and that whole experience and how that was helpful for you in your healing journey.
Yes, thank you. Yes, through friends and family, we launched our first event, Walk for Hope, here in Sandpoint in 2016. It was the year after we lost our daughter, and the purpose was to raise money for us to use here in our community and then the school districts to continue with suicide awareness and just promoting kindness and loving yourself and educating people on, you know, how to be a better person and just, you know, soul searching. And so we did that in 2016, and it's an annual event. It happens every Labor Day on Sunday. And for me, what I've learned, we've now had the event 3 years, and what I have gathered from other community members is that they appreciate having the time and a space to go to be together and build new relationships and bonds and just be in the presence of others that have experienced the loss of suicide in one way or another. And it's very much a tool that is open to the community. We do have registration fees. However, we always have donors that donate money to cover registrations for those that cannot afford them. So if you're at all interested, I highly recommend that you reach out to us and let us know, and we will find a way for you to be there. Anybody is welcome at no charge. The registration fee just covers a shirt that every year gets updated with a new list of sponsors and just another reminder that you can wear all year long to hold on pain ends. Mm-hmm. That is what HOPE stands for. And there's a website, walkforhopesandpoint.org. You're welcome to go there, and there's a way to contact us if needed. And yeah, so our family, that's one thing. Again, our kids, they, you know, as a family, just doing that event every year, even though it's a lot of work, it's so fulfilling in the end, just knowing that we did it, and that we may have helped somebody, we may have touched somebody, we may have brought some, you know, new friends together, and, you know, helped bridge that grief process, or assisted in getting them resources. We usually reach out to our community and have members of different organizations present to also assist in, you know, promoting resources or being there if you know, someone is in need of somebody to talk to. As well as the high school, they also donate the chuck wagon for us to offer a barbecue at the end, which is just another great social gathering, you know, time for people to, you know, get to know each other and build relationships. All of the local grocery stores pitch in and donating all of the hot dogs and the buns and the condiments and drinks. So it's been a huge community outreach. I think it's not just me, it's our community putting it on and doing an amazing job of, you know, providing this space for people to come.
That's beautiful, Jennifer. Could you tell us again the name of your website and how they would reach out to you?
Yes, we have a Facebook page as well, but the website is walkforhopesandpoint.org. Mm-hmm. And there's a contact button there, and that'll get you directly to myself.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that, Jennifer, and for the beautiful work.
It's my pleasure.
So some other resources that are in town are through hospice. There is the Coping with Grief class, which is an 8-week class, 2 times a year in the fall and the spring. And there's one coming up in April.
Actually, it's coming up early this year, Jenna. It's coming up at the end of February.
There you go.
Thank you. So we're accepting applications as we speak.
And you can call 208-265-1185 for that. And then we also have an ongoing twice a month grief support group. That's more of a drop-in group. And we have individual bereavement counselors, and we have a bereavement newsletter called Journeys. That's a national newsletter that comes out once a month. So there's many different ways that you can access support. And I also want to say that we have a kids grief camp, and that comes in June, and it's over a weekend for the ages of 8 to 17. And we have a lot of regular camp activities, but we also process the grief in lots of good ways, and using play therapy for one and nature for another. And it's a transformative weekend for those kiddos.
Yes.
And for the volunteers, the many volunteers that join with us.
And this year, our grief camp is June 21st through the 23rd. And just so everyone knows, there is no cost for any of these resources that hospice offers. And it is open to both Boundary and Bonner County.
And I also want to say, community members, that you are the resource for people, because they didn't just lose a person, but they lost who that person, the role that that person played in their family. And so sometimes we help connect. Maybe it's a grandpa or a father that died that went hunting or fishing with a child. And you could fill that role, you know, as a friend and family member or church member. And so there's so many ways just to look around, you know. You know, perhaps a woman has lost her husband that took care of the car. And so to show up and check the oil. And, there's so many ways to support people.
I love that you're sharing that, because that kind of brings us back around to the whole sense of community, and that we do not have to be professional experts to be present to others. We get to be present, we get to walk with, we can companion with others, and we recognize that when someone dies, it does touch many people, and sometimes families aren't even aware of the level of, I want to say, profound connections or seeds of kindness that were planted by that person, or the things that they remember. And so I think it's so important that we have community events like Walk for Hope, or we have community events like our Memorial Tree of Life that's always have every year in December, because it gives us an opportunity to come together as a community and to acknowledge each other and acknowledge the journey of healing, but most importantly, to be able to share our love story and to recognize that that is something that is with us for all time.
And also to be together in the joy of being in community.
Yeah.
Because what loss is really about is the fact that we've loved.
Yeah.
We've loved deeply.
Yeah.
We feel loss.
Yeah.
We want to heal from that and walk forward.
Yeah.
And I think as important as it is to experience grief in community, community grieving doesn't always work for everybody.
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to say, I'd like to have help with my grief. And for many people, they can say those words. But some people can't. Some people need to grieve privately. And to know that that's also okay.
Yes.
That they don't have to feel bad for reaching out or for participating publicly with their grief. Because that doesn't work for everyone.
Right.
The important thing is that somehow you find a way to grieve, to acknowledge. Oftentimes that involves tears. And as a physician, I think it's important to know that tears do stop eventually.
Yeah.
We tend to have 6 to 7 minute cycles of tears. We sometimes are afraid to start crying because it feels like those tears are not going to stop, but they will. They'll start again maybe, but tears come in cycles. They've done studies on tears, and we actually know that tears of grief are different from tears of joy, which tells me that there's some innate wisdom in our bodies, that tears are manufactured as byproducts of that grief, and that's a really important to let those out. So for people who don't want to grieve as publicly in community, that's also okay. I highly recommend crying into bath towels. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that soggy pile of Kleenex is a little bit intimidating, but realizing that you can cry into an entire bath towel and not even see those tears makes you realize that you can grieve large and still be whole.
That's beautifully shared, and that just kind of rolls back to what we shared in the very beginning, is that grief and mourning are a very unique journey, and not everyone's going to do that journey. It's not going to look the same for you or for you or for you or for me. You know, we all have our different ways of coping. We have our different ways of mourning. We have our different ways of healing, and yet we can see the benefits. We can see that there are resources, and sometimes, you know, the person that's coming over to just take us to a movie and distract us for a minute, there's a gift in that. There's a gift in being able to find the laughter. There's a gift to have somebody in front of you that is willing to be just present and to be present to the pain and bearing witness with us. But all of us can play a different role in terms of companioning with others. It's something we all can do. And anyone that is out there that is experiencing a loss and going through a journey of healing, just remember that we have resources in our community and we are walking with you.
So here's a poem, Wild Geese, by Mary Oliver. And I won't read the whole poem, but the parts that I think are pertinent. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things.
You had something, Steve,
yes,
to share.
But also thank you so much for sharing that. Mary Oliver has ended up being a frequent part of some of our adult grief groups, and that's just wonderful. A few minutes ago, you guys reminded me of this wonderful Anne Lamott quote, and it's short, but it seems to cover a lot of what we've been talking about, and so I was hoping maybe I could
share it. Steve. Please share.
Okay. You will lose someone you can't live without, and your heart will be badly broken, and the bad news is that you never completely get over the loss of your beloved. But this is also the good news. They live forever in your broken heart that doesn't seal back up. And you come through. It's like having a broken leg that never heals perfectly, that still hurts when the weather gets cold, but you learn to dance with the limp.
Oh, so beautifully shared. Please let me take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you, Dr. Pelly, Jenna Moss, Steve Garvin, and Jennifer Wyman, for your gift of being with us today and for sharing with our community.
And thank you, Lissa, for organizing this for the community and for sharing these incredibly valuable thoughts.
Uh-huh. And so it is. Thank you.